up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this very week, specifically comic books, not regular wordy word.
We're going to cover all of the novelizations of all of your favorite films on today's The Stack.
Little Monsters. We're going to start with that.
Definitely. And of course, all the political books coming out because it is an election year.
Yeah. Have you read Ross Perot's book yet?
Yep. That's a fresh take. Is he alive?
I don't think he's. Oh, did he die?
I don't know. Today?
Oh, geez.
Wow. Oh, R.I.P. The god, Ross Perot, king of the 1992 election.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to say skip Ross Perot's book.
Wow. Okay. Because it's not written and he's dead.
Yeah, there we go. But here's a book that was written and is very much alive. Giant Size X-Men number one from Marvel Comics, written by Jonathan Hickman and art by Russell Dodderman. This is taking place in the new continuity where the X-Men are living on the island nation of Krakoa. And this tees off something that happened very early in the X-Men run, where the X-Men went and attacked sort of this like machine nation type thing. Storm is now back. She's not feeling that well. So Jean Grey and Emma Frost go into her mind to find out what's going on and lead to some big potential things for the X-Men. But mainly, this is an awesome showcase for Russell Dodderman.
Yes. So this is a almost wordless book.
Which I appreciated.
You did, yeah, because you hate words, even the ones I'm saying right now.
True.
The thing is with this is it's but it's sold. It was sold to me anyway as a Emma Jean Grey confrontation emotional issue.
Oh, how is it sold to you like that?
It was like Giant Size X-Men, Jean Grey, White Queen. Like they have shit to work out.
Sure.
Because of Cyclops, there's a love triangle years ago. They're all aware of it.
Right. Yeah. But now they're all boning.
Well, I know. But
in the start of the book, it starts off with they're about to go in, and then Jean Grey stops, kisses Wolverine, and then goes in. Doesn't even look in Scott's direction.
Yeah, because it's his turn.
That's what, well, again,
he gets Tuesdays and Thursdays.
I brought this up, I think, on the last Stack podcast.
Saturdays as well.
Where I was like, we're not given access to any of the emotional underpinnings of any of the X-Men stories. And this is another example of that, where we see this little scene where Jean kisses Wolverine. And you're like, what's the deal? No.
What is the deal?
And Cyclops and Wolverine have a little scene where it's like, we're buddies, right?
That was X-Men 7, right?
Oh, maybe that's true.
Yeah. I mean, we could talk about that. That's fine. But yeah, it's the same sort of thing where they're like, hey, we're going to go hang out and go on vacation. And Wolverine's like Genie in a bikini and Scott's like Scotty in a Speedo.
Yeah, and it's just like, what?
That doesn't rhyme.
It doesn't rhyme, which is the big problem there. My big weird problem with Giant Size X-Men is Jean Grey's in her X-Men Red costume. Instead of the classic Jean Grey costume that she's been in inexplicably since this reboot.
I think they can wear whatever they want.
Yeah?
I don't mind. They have different costumes in their closet.
No, we wear the same clothes every day.
That's true. That is our standard uniform.
And I'll tell you what, they're starting to get skin tight.
Yeah, true. Because we're getting so muscular.
Right, exactly. We're working out while we're doing this.
Because we're on missions all the time.
People don't get to see that.
Podcasting
missions.
We
are lifting while we're doing
this.
Yeah,
for those of you not in our studio, it's a gym. And
right.
We are always a danger room.
And that's why between us talking, if you hear anybody going, that's what's going on.
It's because we're tired from working out, not from sitting still and talking into a microphone because we're physically fit. The thing. But what I'm saying, that's a very nitpicky complaint. This book.
Is it?
I thought it technically. Yes.
Yes, it is.
I would defy anyone to draw us the X-Men Red.
I mean, there's something going on out there.
My point is, I thought this was going to be something completely different than what it was.
Right.
Not that I'm complaining, because it was a beautiful, beautiful issue.
Beautiful issue.
But again,
and also big reveal that Storm's a robot.
She has a
machine virus,
a techno-organic virus.
Right,
pretty
and
sure,
she has 30 days.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure she's a robot. I read the comic.
It was a dream state. There's also little hints of Black Panther throughout the dream state. It goes through Storm's history in a very nice, subtle way throughout, which I really liked a lot.
It was cool.
It is interesting. I haven't read ahead with the publishing plan, so I don't know if it's like quarterly Giant Size X-Men or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it did feel like this is a very nice art showcase that is otherwise a regular sized X-Men.
Yeah. And even beyond that, this felt like Giant Size X-Men Storm.
Right.
Featuring Jean Grey and White Queen.
Yes, yeah. That is true.
And so that's what I felt deceived by.
It really was Giant Size X-Men. Hey, check out this sick art, man.
That's a longer title, harder to solicit.
It doesn't really fit on a marquee necessarily.
Well, can we talk about the way the animals were and their eyes lined up? That was really crazy.
That's even more. That's a nitpicky compliment.
Yeah, it was really. I don't know.
I love comics where the eyes line up with the animals.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It happens a lot in many comics.
Pete got a velvet poster of a kitty that just follows him everywhere. Yeah. The eyes are always meeting.
Oh, and were you tripping balls when you read this? Or how did it go?
I was tripping my face off. But I really did.
Although I didn't get as many things
answered as I would have liked. I thought it was really well done, very artistically driven, and I can appreciate that, even though I'm a little frustrated with, I want to know what's happening.
I will. One interesting thing that's been happening, and I know we're still very relatively early in this new continuity for X-Men, but it feels like there's so much setup. It feels like you're listening to a teapot, and you're at the point where it's like, but it hasn't, the steam hasn't poured out yet.
What a fucking old man way of referring to something.
Here's the most relevant music I can listen to. Oh, I'm sorry.
The sound of a teapot getting ready to boil over.
I'm sorry. Here, I'll do something you can relate to. It's like when you're in the club, man, and the EDM music is playing, and it's like...
What's the bass drop?
They haven't hit the drop yet.
They haven't hit the drop yet.
I mean, that is what I think that is a better analogy.
I was thinking maybe a better analogy is when you first take your dentures out and you put them right into the...
Yeah. And the fixident is, it's cleaning it, but it's not clean yet, so you can't put them back in. And you're hungry for the oatmeal, very spicy meal you have planned.
Sure.
Thanks. Your 4 p.m. oatmeal. Is it breakfast or dinner? Nobody knows.
If I have oatmeal at 4 p.m., I'm going to be sick all evening. I'm never going to fall asleep.
Oh, my God.
My stomach can't
Alex's old man analogy aside, I agree with you. We know this is a long run of X-Men, but also we need to hear the stories being told now.
Right.
And it does feel like we're on this elaborate build toward something that we don't know when or where the climax.
Classic Hickman.
But I disagree with that because I do think Hickman's stuff did have smaller payoffs as it built the ladder. This one definitely feels like across all the titles, it's building towards something and we don't know when the release is.
Wake me when we get to something.
This is how I've been feeling. I will say we're going to talk towards the end of the stack about X-Men number 7,
yeah.
Which I do think...
He did an X-Men sandwich.
He did an X-Men sandwich.
First and last. It's an X sandwich.
And he is going to sink his dentures into that later on, as soon as they're clean.
Won't be able to sleep, though. But I do think that does deliver on what we're talking about a little bit. But I think we need that stuff more frequently because for every one thing we get, there's 17 things that are being set up.
Yes, agreed.
It's starting to get pretty annoying.
Speaking of setup, let's talk about Leviathan Dawn, number 1 from DC Comics, written by Brian Michael Bendis and art by Alex Maleev. This is following directly on Event Leviathan, the big event that they were doing.
Featuring Leviathan.
Where we found out who Leviathan was.
Yes, and as we know, the DC Comics world is a land of many contrasts. Thank you for listening to my book report on Event Leviathan.
Wow, truth.
So we found out about this. Leviathan was secretly Manhunter, a.k.a. Mark Shaw.
He disabled
all of the spy organizations in the DC universe, consolidated them under him with the promise of creating a new world, almost revealed all of the secrets in the world until he was stopped by none other than Lois Lane, publishing a sweet expose in the Daily Planet. And now they're reeling from that and getting everything back together. This is what I wanted Event Leviathan to be.
Really?
Interesting.
This title, this start here.
I was really hoping it was going to be about Mark's brother, Rick.
Rickshaw. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Woo! Denture jokes all day.
Pete, great job. Take the rest of the episode off.
Thanks, man.
Nap time. Interesting that you think that, because this, to me, the first half of this felt like a story where it's like, remember when we revealed that shit? Crazy,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And then it was like just chatting about how cool the thing they just did was.
Yeah.
only when it got to setting up this new Checkmate was I super excited.
Yeah. So this first issue is about...
I like Checkmate.
Checkmate's great.
Really?
It's about setting up a new Checkmate. It's on the other end of the spectrum. Leviathan makes a big move towards legitimacy in the eyes of the world. So we have this conflict set up, and I think even if it's a precursor to a Checkmate series... This is what I was waiting for. Like, the event Leviathan felt like, who is Leviathan? Who is Leviathan? Who is Leviathan? That's all we got going here. This feels like a legitimate conflict between two burgeoning spy organizations, and that's much more exciting to me.
Yeah,
I don't know. There was a point where they were just sitting around going, like, all right, what are we going to do now? I don't know if I want to be here. All right, well, somebody kill that guy. All right, let's figure this out.
I do think to Pete's point, and sort of the criticism we were talking about the X-Men universe, this is sort of similar, where it's like moving a ton of tiny pieces one little step forward each issue, as opposed to sort of classic comic book storytelling is large arcs that sort of move quickly and heighten very quickly and then finish and then start over again. This is like building toward a very wide, long arc.
Yeah.
And it's just a different type of storytelling, and I feel like I want some more big swings.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. Moving on to a new book from Dark Horse Comics, Hidden Society number 1. The script is by Rafael Scavone and the art by Rafael Albuquerque.
Love him.
Oh, yeah. We love the Kirky.
Yeah.
So good. Definitely, I should have written this down, but definitely a different sort of inking than his usual work on, say, American Vampire or things like that. It feels a little
Blue
thicker,
Beetle back
a little
in the
more
day.
Fleshed out. Yeah.
It reminds me of Fables a little bit, sort of a little more storybook inking style.
So this is... exactly what you think from the title. It's about a hidden world of magic that is going on in the background. Some new characters end up in this hidden world of magic. I thought it was cute.
What? Yeah, cool. I don't know. Yeah. Your voice got real high. It sounds like you're lying.
I don't know.
I think Alex really liked this book. Based on he said it was cute.
Yeah, it's cute.
So I liked it. I thought it was a solid first issue, really setting up the world, kind of setting up what's going on here. I think they did a great job of getting you excited for more to see how the story moves forward.
There's a magician in this book who makes the Brooklyn Bridge disappear.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Very similar to David Copperfield, who made the Statue of Liberty disappear.
Right.
David Copperfield made me disappear when I was 5 years old. Have I ever told you that?
No, you never mentioned that before.
I was like, where is he going with this? Oh, right.
It's all part of a very good review of this comic.
Right. Other than the kid reminds me of, like...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh. No, I'm sorry. Please, Pete, go.
Other than your Copperfield plug, did you have any thoughts on the actual book?
I just want to mention you what just happened here. That was like the other day. Pete and I were at the buffet at around 4:30, and the last prunes were there.
Oh,
we both went up at the same time. I was like, oh, excuse me. And he was like, oh, excuse me. And Pete ultimately ate the prunes.
Yeah, well, it's crazy.
Shat his pants all over the place.
What's crazy
it was
is
awful.
4:30, prime time. You're going to run out of prunes? What kind of restaurant are you?
This is a cruise ship restaurant, clearly. I'm clearly your nephew or grandson has gone on vacation with his two grandfathers.
Right.
It's like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, except there's no fucking golden ticket.
Right. We fall asleep at 6 p.m. You sneak out, get your first kiss.
Yeah, that's right. That's what happens on the cruise, baby.
And that's apparently our review of Hidden Society number 1. Let's move on to talk about Falcon and Winter Soldier number 1 from Marvel Comics, written by Derek Lando and art by Federico Vincentini. So this is exactly what you think. It's Falcon, it's Winter Soldier, clearly to have something on the stands for one of the Disney Plus series hits, which is fine, but it's a fun pairing.
And it feels like this is what the TV show might be like, where you have Falcon being like, hey, let's play this straight, and Winter Soldier being like, I kill people whenever I want.
Yeah. Fuck people up. Come on.
Yeah.
I like this quite a bit. It felt like it was picking up on Matthew Rosenberg's, was it Tales of Suspense, the one that paired together Hawkeye and Winter Soldier?
I think you're correct.
Sure.
Which was super fun. There's references there. They ask about Hawkeye. They slag him off a little bit. But one thing... This is a weird thing to pick out, but that I like quite a bit as a storytelling technique. There were time dashes in here where I feel like too often comic books just go scene, 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 scene. We're going straight forward.
Yeah.
Here, there was good comedic timing where they leave off a scene, clearly cut forward in time, and then pick it up on the next page, which I thought was nice from the writing perspective.
And there's some other fun stuff like Winter Soldier saying Robot Arm Club, that moment. Like, it was sort of a classic, straightforward superhero team up. We have two different styles about doing this, and we're going to have to get along.
The old odd couple.
Odd couple. But there were some fun notes here, and I do like both these characters.
The villain's also pretty good as well.
Yeah.
It's a fun villain.
Yeah, the art's great. A lot of great action.
The lady's hungover is fun.
Oh, yeah. She can't deal with it. It's hard to deal when you're hungover. Yeah. I feel like this is a fun start to hopefully a great series.
There we go. Yeah. Great. Let's move on to an Image comic book, Ice Cream Man, number 18, written by W. Maxwell Prince and art by Martin Morazzo. This, of course, is one of our absolute favorite books here on the podcast. Every issue is sort of its own independent tale with a very dark twist, usually. Some of them tie it very casually into an overall narrative. This is, I think, one of those one-shots. Yes, Pete, you have a question.
Right, I have a question for both of you guys.
Yeah, yes. What up?
We're kind of far into this story. I keep thinking, like, okay, I understand what's happening now. This next issue, I'll be able to
really
follow and
really
understand it. It's not going to throw me for a loop this time because I spent too much time with this comic and I like it too much to get thrown every single issue.
And you got thrown again.
Yeah.
You got bucks right off that Bronco.
It's funny. This is, I have the complete opposite feeling that I have from X-Men about this, where it's like, take as long as you want, buddies. Just keep going with it. It's all good. Give me no answers. I'm fine with that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we've really got nothing. And then when we thought we had something...
Well, I want to say, I mean, specifically to talk about this issue, I thought this was phenomenal. Like, this is one of...
So good. Heartbreaking. So sad.
So this is, to give you the setup of it, there is a guy, he's clearly, towards the end of his life, suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's or something like that. He's forgetting things, and he's picturing it as a goblin coming into his mind and taking... A gremlin.
Yeah.
Sorry, throwback to the classic Twilight Zone episode. Yes. Stealing all of his memories, so you have this weird, upsetting, supernatural thing going on. But ultimately, it just ties into his relationship with his family, with his son and daughter, who he has damaged in different ways. He himself was damaged by his parents. So it is the cycle of not even abuse, but just being a family that's drifted down through time. It's a very powerful, beautifully done issue.
Yeah, in this issue, the tragedy is just the way people treat each other, specifically in families. And the supernatural aspect is just the natural progression of life. And the writing in each of these issues is so smartly done. There's little ticks and little stylistic differences in each issue, in this one as well, that are so smart and just make for a one-of-a-kind story experience. One of the best comics on the stand.
It's creepy. It's amazing. It's heartfelt. And it's also, I mean, as parents, you guys got to be afraid that, you know, and maybe at the end of your life, someone might just be like, you know what? Fuck you, Dad. You know what I mean? Like
that's not what the kids do, though.
No, but I mean, it's like there was parts with his son that his son felt very disconnected, and you know.
But he's sort of saying like, "This is life," and I love the moment when the daughter/sister is pregnant, and he's like, "Oh, a little gremlin in there," just like the cyclical nature of all of this. Like in the last couple panels, just very good.
Heartbreaking.
Like, stop having gremlins. I mean, people are going to keep getting.
That's the thing. You fuck a gremlin, you're going to have a gremlin.
Oh. That's true. That's true.
That's the main takeaway.
I find that insulting because I'm married to a gremlin. And I have two gremlin children.
Yeah, but you had a beautiful wedding.
Thank you. We had it in the underworld where she's from.
Anyway, great, great issue. Definitely pick this up. Even if you haven't been reading the title, you could just jump right in.
You
pick this one.
Any one of these issues, pick it up. You won't have any
idea.
Be
devastated. Have a good time.
You could just lay down and have a nightmare of this story.
Next one, DC Comics Amethyst, number one, story and art by Amy Reeder. This is picking up on the continuity of Amethyst, Princess of the Gem World.
Gems.
She was truly outrageous. Was it Teen Titans or Young Justice? Whatever the Bendis title that he did. They're a fucking thing he did.
Oh, my God. Anything with those kids.
Really turning into an old man.
Can't keep up with
Here's
these
the
kids.
Thing. She's on a law and a bunch, and I wish she would get off of it. So she's the princess of the Gem World. She heads back to the Gem World. Things are not right, and she goes exploring. I thought this was a fun romp.
The art on this was really fantastic.
The art is fun. I also like Amy Reeder does a good job of adding sort of a more underpinning darkness, like politics that you didn't see coming in this story. It feels like almost like an action figure based story, like, oh, this girl gets to go play in this fantasy world. And in fact, there's something amiss, something dark underneath. And I feel like it's not going to be just a classic supervillain versus hero story.
I definitely agree. All right. At this point, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey, Alex here. Remember that feeling when you'd subscribe to comics, get one in the mail, and it felt like you were receiving solid gold? Well, what if you could get that feeling, but with actual gold? Thanks to this week's sponsor, Acre, you can. Acre is the new subscription platform for gold. Acre lets you make small monthly payments and then sends gold straight to your doorstep every few months. You subscribe to comics, right? And maybe someday you'll sell them if the paper doesn't dissolve and the staples don't fall out. It's expensive, unlike Acre, which is affordable. You don't have to pay out of your pocket all at once. It's convenient. Just set up the subscription and forget about it. And you will get, no joke, physical gold bars mailed to your doorstep. Acre-branded gold is of the highest quality, designed in California and minted in Switzerland, my favorite state and favorite country, respectively. It's safe and simple with gorgeous packaging and excellent customer service. And here's how it works. You subscribe for just $50 a month. That's right, no need to break the bank. Start buying gold for just $50 a month. And there's even a $30 per month option. Even less breaking of the bank. Then you watch your gold grow. It's like watching that stack of unread comics grow dangerously next to your bed. Except guess what? Acre will keep you updated on your gold stash as you make progress. And once your gold stash reaches the price of 2.5 grams Acre gold bar, they will discreetly ship you your gold. Most of all, you're in control. You can easily cancel or modify your plan to suit your needs at any time. No epic crossovers where you have to buy all the issues. Just gold, gold, gold. Find out more by going to the link in our show notes and start your Acre Gold subscription today.
All right, we're back with Valiant. Wait,
hey,
what?
While we took this break, I wanted to just say something. With the whole ice cream man thing, something that occurred to me after we finished talking about it, is sometimes it does include ice cream in the comic, and then sometimes doesn't address ice cream at all.
Does that bother you?
It does bother me, because I'm like, well, does this have something to do with it, or it doesn't?
I liked it over the entire review of Amethyst. You were thinking about ice cream.
Yeah.
I liked that it's sometimes ice cream because that's what life is. Life is sometimes ice cream.
I would also argue that there is ice cream in every issue. Just sometimes the ice cream is a little more powerful.
Or sometimes it's melted. Okay. Or sometimes it's just milk and sugar.
And eggs.
It's pre-ice cream.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Getting ready to be a custard. So we were going to talk about Valiant Comics Quantum and Woody number 2, written by Chris Hastings and art by Ryan Brown. This is another fun romp going on here. Oh. We really enjoyed the first issue of this. Wait, what?
It's a fun romp.
You're agreeing. You gave a real paid expression there.
He hates to agree with you.
Oh, okay. There's nothing like a nice fun romp. Writer and the artist having a great time with these characters. This is just a great book. It's exactly what you think it is in such a fun way.
So two brothers, Quantum and Woody, they have to clang their bracelets together every 24 hours or they completely dissipate into the air.
And they don't get along.
Yeah. And this issue, they're trying to repair their reputation as superheroes, head to an ice skating rink to take care of a parasitic brain entity called Mr. Toilet? Captain Toilet?
Dr. Toilet.
Dr. Toilet. Thank you. Sorry, he didn't go to 4 years of Toilet Medical School.
That's right.
For nothing.
I think it's a little shout out to Dr. McNinja, I think.
You think it is? Oh, are all doctors? When you go to the doctors, are you like, are you, sir, a shout out to Dr. McNinja?
Yep. He actually goes to Chris Hastings to get checked up, and Chris is like, please, I'm not a doctor. You got to stop doing this.
Yeah. And honestly, you need to stop eating so much salt.
Right, and pull up your pants.
Oh, damn it.
They encounter this parasitic entity. They also encounter a new hero who's much better at it than they are. Super, super fun.
I love the Dr. Toilet as a villain, the way it's drawn and sort of acts the entire time. Eventually takes a bunch of zoo animals under his thrall. Very fun.
As you would.
Definitely pick this up if you're looking for a fun, funny comic book. Next one up from Marvel Comics, Fantastic Four, Grim Noir number 1. Some storytellers on this book are Ron Garney and Jerry Dugan. This is a one-shot involving the Thing dealing with some nightmares that he's having. Particularly, I think this is a great showcase for Ron Garney's art.
This was so well done, I thought.
It was almost frustrating that it was only a one-shot because it kind of leaves you hanging a little bit. But the art is such, like the paneling, the whole thing is just amazing storytelling and kind of a crazy dreamlike state.
I really like when Ben Grimm gets to go do his own thing. I feel like in a lot of Fantastic Four stories, his plots are all about how he's like pissed off that he's the thing or frustrated because of his wedding gets interrupted by a fight, things like that. And it's great to see him just get out, do something else. We get to in his head. And this is like sad. It seems like it's him dealing with his own despair, but it was really just well told and truly beautifully drawn.
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect going in here. I thought it would be another one of the noir line where it was like very 1920s. And there was definitely a sense of that. Like there's a little bit of the detective language that comes
in there. Trench coat.
But it hits it in such a fun way. It felt like a lost comic book from the 80s to me.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, a good lost comic from the 80s.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, I meant that as a comic.
Right. A purposefully lost, like a thrown away comic?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I don't want that.
No, it's great. Yeah. Definitely pick it up. Next story we're going to talk about from IDW Comics, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Jetica, number one. This has two stories in it. First one, The Cure for You, story art and letters by Bram Revel, and then Time and Again, story and colors by Rana Pattinson and art by Jody Nishijima. So if you don't know, which I didn't really know.
Me neither. Pete, you're our TMNT guy.
That's right.
You're a man on the street when it comes to TMNT. You're a man under the street, really.
What's the deal with Jenica, Pete?
Well, as you guys all know, there was a huge mutant explosion that happened, and you know all these people became mutants, like we've all wanted to actually have happen in our real lives.
Now, if that happened in New York City, would you be like, and you weren't there?
I would be so, if I was like outside the city, like visiting family or something, and like a huge mutant bomb, and people got to turn into these giant.
Turned into animals.
Yeah. And some people turned into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I wasn't one of them.
What if you got to be, what if you ended up being like an animal you didn't want to be?
Well, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Like a zebra.
Like if Alex and I became turtles and you were like a zebra.
It would be, it depends. Like, you know, the horse that we got to see in this, you know, issue was a badass looking horse. If I was a badass zebra, I mean, like Rocksteady and Bebop, pretty badass.
What's like a bad edible?
Cockroach.
Yeah, that would suck.
Yeah. I will say, if you ever walk through the city with Pete, he'll throw himself in every puddle just in case.
Oh, man.
That's a yeah.
I've talked about this before.
You have. Like, alarmingly so.
I almost did that.
You almost drank some random street ooze because it looks green.
It was green.
Green, normally something that would say, don't drink me.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, it could be poison ooze.
It could be poison.
There's a 33% chance could be ooze. 33% chance it's Mountain Dew.
Oh,
33% chance I die. Good odds.
I like those odds.
So Jenica, since I assume you don't actually know what happened with her, it was a whole She-Hulk type situation where she got a blood transfusion from one of the turtles, turned into a turtle herself. I honestly don't know what's going on with the whole mutant animal town, but that's the deal with her. So as you see in the flashbacks, in the second story and a little bit throughout the first story, she used to be a human, knew the turtles anyway. Now she's a turtle herself. She is officially the fifth turtle.
Yep.
Okay.
She's another teenager in Ninja Turtles. Is she a teenage?
Well, she's, you know.
Are the turtles themselves still teenagers?
Not at this point, no.
Yeah. The 30-something mutant Ninja Turtles? Wow, that should be addressed.
Millennial mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Are they still ninjas?
You know how it works. Like, time is a little funny in comics.
It is funny.
Yeah.
And real life.
Very funny. It's very,
very
funny.
Very funny.
Yes.
Very funny.
I thought this was a beautiful issue.
I really like this as well. The Mutant Town storyline, I think, is a fun way to explore the TMNT universe. I thought this whole thing was great.
I really like the coloring in particular.
Sort of washed out a little bit colors.
It was. The flashbacks all kind of being one color, very solid, gave a nice delineation between what was happening in the past and the present. Really good stories overall.
And that's why I don't get into mosh pits, you know what I mean? You got to run into somebody you have a past with, and you got to stay out of that.
Yeah, stay out of the mosh pit. Yeah. What if you ate the ooze and you just became a regular turtle?
I don't know, still win.
Still in?
Still in. I'll tell you what, I used to own a turtle. They got a lot of algae on their shells.
Yeah.
And you got to clean it off.
Yeah, it's you got to clean it off.
We'd scrub you.
An asshole.
We'd scrub you. And we would tape little nunchucks to your hands. Just because I know that'd make you, even if you couldn't swing them.
Oh, no, I would learn.
No, right. I don't think so.
Yep.
That's not how turtles work.
Well,
or by most animals.
All right, let's move on with DC Comics Year of the Villain, Hell Arisen, number 3, written by James Tynion IV and art by Steve Epting and Javier Fernandez. We haven't been really keeping up with this one, right?
Well, let me say, I have been keeping up with this a bit, and I've said a lot on this. It's on our podcast. It's crazy what's going on in the DC universe with all the different events.
Yeah.
So many events, man.
With all the You're the Villain stuff with Lex Luthor and Pandora and all that. Then you have the Batman Who Laughs is off to the other side doing stuff. Leviathan, all over that. This comic book does yeoman's work combining the Lex Luthor shit with the Batman Who Laughs stuff.
Yeah.
And at one point in this, when there's a big lot of scenes with Joker and Lex Luthor, Joker's like, yo, our characters don't do well in stories like this. It's too big.
Yeah.
And I love James Tynion is like calling out how crazy shit is. And it feels like a roller coaster that's just about to come off the rails. But I think this is doing a good job of bringing it together.
Totally agree. And Lex Luthor being, you know, that Lex Luthor is like, no, come on, you're not going to do, you're just going to go back and just kill people. That's all you're going to do? And Joker's like, that's what I like. That's where I'm happy.
Yeah, don't tell me what I like doing.
Yeah, I really like this a lot. And I think a lot of that does have to do with not just the art, which is very good, but James Tynion having such a good grasp on the DC Comics characters across the board.
There's another great line about Lex where he's like, your plans are always too big because you just like making plans and you always lose because of something simple. Another great assessment of Lex Luthor.
I also just like the way that Joker just kind of made an entrance. You know, he just kind of like stumbled in. He was just like, ooh, do I have the right room? Like, just such great Joker stuff. And to see him interacting with Lex Luthor was so creepy in such a way that I was just, this seems so crazy with all the shit going on, but there are really nice moments in between all the
madness. Commissioner Gordon, bad guy.
Yeah.
That hurts. I don't like that.
I'm fine with it.
It'll never correct itself. All right, let's move on. Talk about Sex Criminals, number 27 from Image
Comics. Of course
Comics.
You want to move on.
This is by, come on, by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky. We are getting close to the end here with Sex Criminals. Things are starting to wrap up and get to the ultimate confrontation. As usual, another great issue. They keep slabbing their own issue in the letters page. They're like, oh, here's where you go.
I know it. I tell you what.
Plot. And I'm like, calm down, guys. This is good stuff.
It makes me enjoy it. It does feel like reading the back matter for the last two issues where Matt Fraction's like, I stopped liking writing this book, and then I decided to do it again. I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah.
It makes it feel, and I don't know if that's influencing my read of it. It makes me feel like it's a little, like, stressed, the text and stuff. But I am excited. It feels like I like all their exchanges, like the scene at the top of this issue where they're drawing on each other. That was really cool. But I still don't know quite where the story's going.
That kind of stuff can really affect you. Like the last season of Arrow, I knew the main character didn't like.
We don't have time for this.
He didn't want to do it. So I was having fun in the season. Then I found that out, and it really ruined it for me. Yeah. So I can totally see you if you're having
fun. I'm sorry. I just had a quick question. Who's the main character in Arrow? Just so I can kind of like picture this
Arrow.
In my head. So he's an arrow, like a talking arrow?
I hate you. But I'm just
saying, Clippy.
Does he walk
Microsoft.
On the feathers? Like the feathers, those are kind of like his feet?
Ooh, like Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yes, exactly. Very
but
cute.
But I'm just saying,
this is a cute show you're watching. We should have talked about this more.
Sometimes don't fucking share things that can pull people out of stories is my point.
I don't think they're... I think they're being self-effacing, right? Like they're making excuses for it, but... the content of the issue, still beautifully drawn art, very powerful emotional stuff, but the connection between the two main characters, which is clearly the thing that they want to write about the most and have been very upfront about, works so well and is so funny and sweet and sad and clearly headed towards tragedy. It's good. This is a good book. Not for kids. Next one to talk about Forceworks 2020 number 1 from Marvel Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg and art by Juanan Ramirez. This is something that Matthew teased on our live show a couple of weeks back, so you can listen back to that live show if you want. This is a bunch of characters in the Marvel Universe fighting cyborgs and robots. That's the concept.
Great like team books are hard, especially when the characters, you have to really introduce them. It's not like writing a main Avengers book where it's like, Captain America, don't need to hear a lot about him. Like this, you need a little bit of context about who they are, what their relationship with each other is, and the rest of the superhero world. And Matt does a good job of laying that out really efficiently and just plowing through this great action sequence.
I really like Rhodey in this. I thought it was well done. He really nailed that voice.
Yeah, I think he's always so good about grasping these weird side characters, Mockingbird, not weird, but like...
Yeah, how dare you call it Mockingbird
really
weird.
Fucking strange. Mockingbird? What's that? What is a mockingbird?
Yeah, it's like a regular bird with sense of humor.
That's right. No, it's sort of like these off-kilter characters. It feels very 90s, which is what it's supposed to feel like.
That's when Forceworks came about, I
exactly.
think.
Exactly, or 2000s or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, it's a fun book. It's exactly what it needs to be, and he nails the tone just right. Next one to talk about from Dark Horse Comics, Tomorrow Number 1, written by Peter Milligan and art by Jesus Hervais. Maybe? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There we go. This is a really upsetting book to read right now.
Why do you say?
Oh, it is about an insane viral outbreak and people barely surviving it.
Well, but this one's about a computer virus that jumps into the humans.
Yes.
So that's not what other viruses are. The coronavirus, which is maybe going to devastate our planet, our real world. But that's just a regular virus.
Right, that just jumps from corona to corona.
And so stay out of... don't change your whole latitude.
And don't watch Fast and Furious movies.
Oh, wait, what's happening? We can't drink Coronas anymore?
No, we can drink Coronas. Oh, that was a very in poor taste joke that I
Vin
just
Vin Diesel is patient zero for the Corona virus.
That's the plot of Bloodshot.
Yeah. He is the Corona light virus.
But this is dealing with this viral outbreak. There's a couple of people, of course, in different parts of the globe who are caught in the middle of it. There seems to be some sort of psychic connection between two of the characters. As usual with a Peter Milligan book, I just think the characters are immediately very well laid out and very clear.
The character and detail work on this story are great. And it's a nice, well-laid-out world. I love that he does, like, a full-page sort of, like, here's what the story you're about to read is, which no one really does in that way.
P. Mills is nice like that.
Yeah, P. Mills. Great stuff.
Yeah, definitely pick this up. But be warned, it's very fraught with current events. Last one to talk about, as we all know, when you're eating a sandwich, you start with the top bread, work your way down
or
through
the top donut.
Sure, or the
That's
top
true.
Donut.
You are pushing the idea that donut can be bread in all sandwiches.
Then the toppings, and then you eat the meat, and then you get to the bottom piece of bread. That's where we are now. Let's talk about X-Men number 7. Or the bottom donut.
Of course, and this is a real donut of a comic.
Yes. Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Lanil Yu. This is X-Men number 7. In this issue, as mentioned, we finally get payoff on something that was teased way back a while ago, which is, what is Crucible? We find out what Crucible is in this issue. Most of the issue is spent with Scott Summers wandering around, talking to people concerned about the idea of Crucible. He has conversations with Wolverine, as we talked about. He has a big, long conversation with Nightcrawler about religion as they go through the Crucible. And spoiler, but it turns out that Crucible is for mutants who are robbed of their powers by the No More Mutants Wanda thing. They have a chance to get it back, but they have to stand up and fight Apocalypse first, die in order to come back, basically prove themselves.
What the fuck, man?
No, I thought this was great.
Wait, you think it's great that you have to fight Apocalypse, and then when you die, you get to be reborn?
Because they're saying, they lay this out. There's a lot of...
Got it laid out for
No, me. I know, but there's a lot of religious undertones and overtones.
And the audience in the book were also on my side when they were screaming and upset with what was happening.
Right, it's upsetting to watch their friend, and in some cases daughter, die in front of them, but that's traumatizing, but it's for the good. It's her choice. She wants to get her powers back. It's about belief. It's about ritual. Like, I thought this was...
It's also about a creepy tuning fork church that not even Wolverine can get into.
That Nightcrawler, the island created a perfect home for Nightcrawler, and he's nervous to go there. I think that's another religious analogy. He's nervous to go into this shrine, this temple that he hasn't been able to come to grips with because he's still faithful to his faith from the regular world, and now there's moving into this sort of more mutant-centric faith and belief system, and he has to...
what about all this the new Krakoa bullshit that all these mutants are getting on board with? But the
but
deeper
not.
We get into it,
this is all, what I was going to say.
The deeper we get into it, the more fucked up we find out it is. And it's
crucible?
More questioning, why the fuck are we doing all this shit?
What they're doing. That's what the entire issue is about. This is the reason that I really like this issue, is we've been talking about this cult of X thing that it feels like is going on. And this issue is all about, are we doing the right thing? Are we going too far with this? This feels wrong. What's wrong with this? What else can we do? What other choices do we have?
What's also upsetting is Cyclops is the fucking voice of reason, and he's never the voice of reason. That guy's
he's
a piece of shit.
He's always the voice of reason.
His Cyclops. Literal thing is being the voice of reason.
Yeah, that's
he's
basically
horrible.
His
horrible.
Only
he's
defining characteristic.
So,
ooh, but you love him now is what I'm
you
getting.
You love Cyclops.
I'm upset that I'm on the side of Cyclops.
You can't even say Cyclops. You're Cyclops. You're Cyclops.
But this is fucked up that they're just murdering people in front of everybody. Some are cheering, some are burning.
So here's the thing that they bring up. And I, to be clear, I don't, it makes me very uncomfortable and I don't agree with it. Like, in theory, like, if I was in that society, I think I'd be like, I'm not on board with this crucible. But the way that they explain it is a million mutants lost their powers. We can bring mutants back. If a million mutants were like, let's all kill
her. Oh, do it at once. Yeah, I know. I read the
right,
fucking
what
comic.
Well, but what do we do? Like, what are our other options? And this is the option they come up with. And the entire issue
is... A fight club is their option.
They create a ritual
take
around
a fucking
it.
Number, man, and
right,
do
they
it.
Take a ritual to say, this is a nearly insurmountable thing to prove that this is what you actually want. Not that this is a crutch you're falling back on.
Yeah.
That's the explanation they give. Whether it's right or not, I think it's a really fascinating discussion that they have.
And, I mean, the larger context here is the mutants on Krakoa are now forming a culture from zero. Like, they've been living in the rest of the world where they are hunted, hated, and feared, living as humans, like, in disguise, many of them their entire lives. And yep. I think what Jonathan Hickman is doing with a lot of these X-Men books is he's saying they now have their own land. They have their own... They are with each other. Like, what does that mean for them? Are they going to create their own religion? Are they going to create... what is their society? What is their culture? What are these rituals that they're creating that give it, this moment value for them and allow a mutant to regain her identity, which was taken because of a mistake that the Scarlet Witch made.
And the other thing, one thing that I will say that I didn't mind with the ritual was it felt pretty clear to me if at any point she said, no, this is not what I'm going to do, they would just
yeah,
let her
go.
Yeah,
but they didn't make that clear.
No, but I think like that's why Apocalypse kept asking her. It was a very clear like...
You cool?
Yeah. He kept checking in with her. Like, he was very considerate of her consent.
Yeah.
And then sure. After she dies and comes back, she gets to fly around, and she's, like, naked in front of all of her friends.
Yeah, that was weird.
Which is real cool.
That's no, that's not cool. That's not cool.
Oh,
not
we close. Should also say Pete was born with cargo shorts and a T-shirt on. He's never naked.
It was a T-shirt that was a tuxedo. I'm classier than that.
Cool, yeah. Cool. Cargo shorts and a tuxedo.
He's the fanciest man on our cruise right
guys,
now.
Pockets are important.
Yeah.
I thought this issue was great. I really liked it a lot.
I completely disagree with you.
I loved a good Nightcrawler conversation.
We're going down this creepy-ass fucking rabbit hole that Hickman's got going on, and it's making me uncomfortable.
If you don't like it, you can tap out at any time, Pete.
That's not true, and you know that.
Any fucking time. I got a giant sword.
All right, here we go. This is me.
Here comes
tapping
the crucible.
Out.
No, you have to keep reading this. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I can't tell if I was tapping out or pretending to be a horse for an old-timey radio show.
Clip-clop. Oh, he's being a zebra. Because he is a zebra.
Well, it all came together.
Zebra the whole time.
It all came together right here at the end. If you'd like to support the show, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by, and we will talk to you about comic books. Pete, what do you want to plug?
Hey, friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Hey, follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Hey, check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. You can subscribe and listen on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher. And those are the only apps. You have no other choices. Right, Pete? I got you.
Yeah.
You thought I was going to say something else. And we'll see you at the comic book
remember,
shop.
Remember, start eating your dinners earlier, like 4.
Yeah, otherwise Pete's going to get your prunes.